and Scott Hasserud, who is the director of Holden Village, and Jerry Swanson, who is at Cal Lutheran. These are people who have been involved in various ways in spiritual journeys in their lives. And we thought it would be an interesting forum to simply reflect on some of the experiences that we have had, as all of us have had, as people who are seeking to have a contemplative life, that is, a life in contact with God, a deepening sense of God's presence in our lives, a sense that our action and our talk and our decision emerges from a sense of our baptism, that God has chosen us and owned us and loves us no matter what. And this is an issue of spirituality, an issue of spiritual nurture. And the question is whether Holden is a place that is a kind of watershed, or a place that enables people to have a deeper contemplative life, and how that is true, if it's true. I hope that all of you will have a chance to respond to that in the course of the evening tonight, as we open this up. Last Friday, I had a sermon in which I talked about Grand Central Station in New York City, because I thought that Holden really is, in some ways, like Grand Central Station. There are comings and goings and schedules and many people. There's much welcoming and much farewelling. However, with a kind of focus and centeredness, it becomes a place where we can really see the hand of God and a kind of beauty, the kind of joy of engagement in a life that changes and lifts up a lot of different things. I will say personally that it's hard for me at Holden to find a still center. I love Holden probably more than any other place that I know of. I've been to many monasteries, many places that have helped me be closer to God better. And for some reason, I'm not exactly sure why. Maybe I can find out more tonight. I still prefer to be at Holden than in these other places. And I'll just say that without saying too much more. So to me, Holden is a kind of incongruous, it has a kind of enveloping energy that speaks to my heart, but it doesn't necessarily lead me further very helpfully in the life of prayer and the life of knowing God. I think the two places that I would look, if I had to very quickly give a sense of where my sense of contemplation comes from, the two places would be St. Benedict and Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And for St. Benedict, I have back here a schedule. A lot of what Benedict was about ordering the life of monks in the 6th century. And I just think it's kind of funny to look at how he ordered the life of the monks, which has been sort of a constant in monastic tradition throughout the ages, and how we at Holden order the life of the guests. When you come to a monastery, you live, in a sense, as a monk, and you are invited to be part of the prayer. And the same is true of a guest at Holden. A guest at a monastery eats at 12 noon dinner in a traditional monastery. There's one meal. Some monasteries, many of them, have altered this so that they have smaller meals in the morning and the evening, but there's one main meal, generally. And in a strict Benedictine monastery, only one meal. In terms of talk in a monastery, except for conversations with the abbot, in general, there's a chapter, which is a conversation in the morning, where you talk about what's going on in the monastery. You read a chapter, actually, of St. Benedict's Rule, and you talk about how that plays out in the monastery. But in terms of prayer, you start at 3 a.m. in a traditional strict Benedictine place with vigils. 6 o'clock is Lauds. Mass is right after Lauds. Terce means 3. It happens at 9, because you add all of the hours on to 6 o'clock, which is dawn. Then Sext, which means 6, is at 12, known as at 3. Vespers at 6, and Compline right after that. Generally, people go to bed so they can get up at 3. Guests at Holden, in terms of eating, you've got breakfast around 7, coffee hour around 10, lunch around 12, dinner around 5, and snacks both in the afternoon and at 8:30 at night.
Lots of eating.
Lots of eating. You can can see Jerry up here with his mouth full. Contemplative. Life here. In terms of talk, there's always talk around the meals, of course. In a Benedictine monastery, you do not talk during the meals. Somebody reads. So there's the Bible study as well. There's a session in the morning, a couple of sessions in the afternoon, a session in the early evening form, which we're at right now. In terms of prayer, Vespers is probably the only time that we would really call prayer. People do matins in the morning. It's usually a short presentation, a reflection or something. Very few of the matins in the morning actually are an attempt to address God as you and to open your heart to God as an actual other person. It's more talking about ideas and things. So that's just a reflection on Benedict. And I'd also like to read a short thing from Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who is a modern day Lutheran who died in 1945, but he attempted to set up a sort of Protestant kind of monasticism in a seminary in a place called Finkenwalde, and he talks about a lot of different things in relation to a life in community. And I want to just talk about read a couple of paragraphs in his chapter on solitude and silence. Bonhoeffer writes, "We recognize then that only as we are within the fellowship, that is the community, only as we are in the fellowship can we be alone. And only the person that is alone can live in the fellowship. Only in the fellowship do we learn to be rightly alone. And only in aloneness do we learn to live rightly in the fellowship. It is not as though the one preceded the other. They both begin at the same time, namely with the call of Jesus Christ. Each by itself has profound pitfalls and perils. One who wants fellowship without solitude plunges into the void of words and feelings. And the one who seeks solitude without fellowship perishes in the abyss of vanity, self-infatuation, and despair. Let the one who cannot be alone beware of community. Let the one who is not in community beware of being alone."
I guess I'd like to say a few things before I begin speaking. Yeah, I'm doing better tonight.
It was a good one.
Or we're catching on.
What I'd like to say before I say a few things about or suggest a few things about a contemplative alternative at Holden would be just to talk a little bit about contemplation. Now, not knowing where any of you are on the subject, many of you may have a real strong value for contemplation. For others, it may be a new thing. I'd like to read to you first just a piece from Morton Kelsey's book called The Other Side of Silence. "The idea of linking silence with prayer may sound like an out-and-out contradiction to many Christians. We are accustomed to thinking of the familiar forms of prayer that people use when they join together to worship or ask God for something. These forms almost always follow a lead given in the past. They are shaped by words set down in the Bible, particularly the Psalms, or by other poetry and by the liturgy. They can vary from the words that come spontaneously in the simplest service to the most elaborate prayers that have grown up around the Eucharist and other sacraments, and either may be used in private devotions. Of course, there is no question about the value and importance of this way of turning to God, but it is not the only kind of prayer that we need. There is another equally important way of praying in which a person becomes silent and tries to listen instead of speaking. Instead of picking up a familiar lead and speaking about the things that all of us feel are needed, one tries to become still. One's effort is to be silent enough to hear first the deepest needs of one's own heart, and then the prompting of the creative spirit in whatever direction it may indicate. In this second kind of prayer, which we call meditation, or which some call contemplation, one is trying to follow one's own inner road as it is opened. Each of these ways of praying is needed, and each supports the other. And Kelsey goes on then to elaborate a bit more on this point, and then concludes with these words. The first step in finding contact with God is learning to be alone and quiet. This is the beginning of silence, of the process of introversion. There is just one aim to start with: to still the tumult of activity in mind and body and center down in a state of recollection. And this means shutting out the invading noises from both the outside world and the inner psychic one. To become really silent, one has to come to a halt outwardly and inwardly at the same time. It is very much like thinking about getting a car tuned up while roaring down the freeway. One cannot do much about it until one slows down, pulls into a service station, and turns the motor off. In reality, this idea of stopping the wheels of progress periodically for silence is common in religious practice. And Kelsey goes on to talk about how common it is in traditions other than our own, particularly in Western Protestantism. I'd like to suggest that contemplation is not an escape, but rather an entry. We have tended to regard it, I think, in Protestant circles as an escape. It's an entry into not only oneself, it is an entry into God, it is an entry into others. Another person that I would recommend reading, of course, is Thomas Merton. Physical solitude, exterior silence, and real recollection are all morally necessary for anyone who wants to lead a contemplative life. But like everything else in creation, they are nothing more than means to an end. And if we do not understand the end, we will make wrong use of the means. And we heard some of the need to balance those contraries in Bonhoeffer. Therefore, we have to remember that we look for solitude in order to grow there in love for God and in love for other people. We do not go into the desert to escape people, but learn how to find them. I think that's a marvelous line by Merton. We do not go into the desert to escape people, but to learn how to find them. We do not leave them in order to have nothing more to do with them, but to find out the way to do them the most good. And so contemplation is not only turning the motor off as you're roaring down the freeway, but it is an entry into yourself, it is an entry into God, it is an entry into others. Contemplation is also, I think, a way of discovering one's next steps. And I couldn't find that T.S. Eliot's Four Quartets in the library. Somebody have that out this afternoon, but there's in East Kokir, there's a marvelous line about the way from where we are to where we need to be is the way of not knowing, the way of no ecstasy. To enter into a contemplative moment is to enter into not knowing. Now, most of us are, or at least myself, I should say, did not grow up being comfortable with contemplation. It was not a part of my own tradition. Any period of silence in church was really uncomfortable. And silence was a very dissonant experience, a very noisy experience. People couldn't stand it. I couldn't stand it. Silence bothered me. I think that's still largely true for us in our tradition. I know I was not taught nor trained nor encouraged to experience being active in silence. I always thought of silence as a very passive thing. I could live through it if I kind of went to sleep, or even kind of went unconscious. It didn't occur to me until later on in life when I began to be connected to those who were contemplatives, what an active time contemplation is. I also learned to understand that contemplation takes many forms. I'm very comfortable sitting quietly because basically I'm an introvert and I have a very active inner life. I process things inwardly. The whole world can be burning down, and if I'm okay, it's okay. But we're all made differently, and some of us do our contemplation differently. Jeanette and I had an opportunity not long ago to visit a woman in a place called Skudeneshavn, which is an old seaport on the coast of Norway, and a Scottish lady who had bought the Bedehus, which was the old prayer house, and which was interesting. And she was a weaver of tapestries, and she would spend years with these tapestries, and they would end up being, you know, like 20 feet by 20 feet. And so her room, her studio was as big as Koinonia, but she needed a big room like that because her tapestries would hang to the ceiling. And her way of contemplation, her form of contemplation, her journey and what God said to her was worked out as she weaved her tapestry. Many of you have worked at journaling as a means of contemplation. And today there's a host of ways of doing journaling. Some of you may have been in Progoff's journaling sessions or other journaling sessions. Carl Jung encouraged people to do what he called active imagination as a form of contemplation, where one writes a dialogue with oneself, essentially, or aspects of oneself. the Benedictines have a statement that work is prayer, and prayer is work, and meaning the two are inextricably tied together. And so their work becomes, in a sense, a form of contemplation. Others can live creatively in silence. In some ways, I think that's the hardest and most difficult for us to contemplate actively in silence. We can sit there, but to make that a creative moment takes great, I think, discipline and probably lots of experimentation in one's life. Now, here at Holden, we have not really had a strong tradition of contemplation, as I observe the Holden community. And I would be very much interested tonight, after the presenters have had a chance to share a few things, your observations and your suggestions about how we might add contemplation more substantially to our life together and to our community. Sometimes in the winter, I understand there's been experiments with days of silence. Is there a way in which we could do that in the summer? There's been some talk recently that perhaps we should have some island, even though the creation that surrounds us offers tremendous opportunity for silence, maybe we also should have some islands of silence in the village. And if we did, what would they look like? What would they be like? How would we enter them and exit them, and so forth? Certainly there's been the suggestion that we could include in Holden's life a tradition that's been very much a part of the Roman Catholic family for a long time, and that's personal, guided, contemplative kinds of retreats for individuals. You may also have some other kinds of suggestions. Certainly it's a direction I would like to see Holden move in. And we want to begin experimenting with more and various ways of contemplation.
A lot of my spiritual formation has come in relating to Jesuit communities. When I was in seminary in Berkeley, there was a Jesuit school there. And on, I guess, six different occasions, I have had the opportunity to be on 8-day silent retreats where I spoke essentially only to the spiritual director. And I couldn't begin to explain the effects that has had on my life. I am the youngest of six children, and grew up in a real chaotic home, and was the victim of some abuse, and learned to survive as an extrovert in the world when in reality I am an introvert, and the silence finally gave me opportunity to discover that introversion and to begin to feel safe and comfortable there. And I was telling Jeff the other day, I had experiences of very, very specifically directed retreats where the priest directing me would give me, I would have 5 one-hour prayer periods a day, and he would give me very specific scripture on which to pray. And I did that about 3 times, and then I went and moved to a new area and had a new spiritual director. And I showed up, and I'd never met this man. And the first thing he said was, "Well, nobody realizes how tired they are when they get here, so just rest today and do whatever you have to do to rest in God's goodness." And I had an entire 24-hour period to simply rest. It was overwhelming. The next direction was, the next day was, "Let God love you today." That was the extent of. And after 3 years of doing retreats with this man, what I've experienced every time is that it took me until the 4th or 5th day to where I was finally not thinking about what I was doing, but would simply move from a place within myself to now take a walk, to now read, to now simply sit. Powerful experiences. I love Holden too. This is my second time here. I was here as a support staff person 8 years ago for 5 weeks, and it's such a stimulating place to be. Everybody's so interesting, and it's almost impossible to get from the dining hall to my lodge without having at least 3 interesting conversations.
Takes you longer now.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It takes me a lot longer now. I could not even stop, and it'll take me 30 minutes now. And I really enjoy that, but I've been here a week now, and I keep being clear about the fact that I'm having a hard time finding any island of silence. It's impossible to get away from other people's noise here. There are times at night when it is quiet, but I have longed for, wishing that up at the somewhere like away, like the Portal Museum, that there was a chapel of some place, some sort for silence, and a chance to be, just to get away. I have discovered here that I can make the conscious decision. I don't have to go to every session that's offered, you know, and listen to the tapes in between of the ones I've missed. that I can really be, you know, intentional about what I'm doing here, and I haven't been at very many sessions. But even with that, I hate to miss the interesting things going on, and would like to see more opportunity to be able to be away and be alone and to be quiet with one another. Communal worship is a deep, deep joy in my life. Also beyond words, what singing with you means to me. And many times when I don't know the hurt that is in my heart, what I will do is go sing. And so that is a wonderful thing. But I would like to see opportunity for to be alone, to be away from other people's noise, and to be in a place that is holy and that feels safe, and to know that, you know, when you're on a path, you can always run into people. Besides the fact that it's really hard to get quiet when you're being eaten alive by flies. So that I would really, really enjoy. My fantasy would be to have a place up and away that is holy and that is silent, and the chance to be more silent with one another more. And the chance for spiritual direction, I think, would be really exciting too. So,
things.
I would like to suggest that we play a little more with this word contemplation and recognize that in the center of it is temple, and the prefix is con, a kind of templing with, so that contemplating is participating with a templing of all of the folks who are around us and the place in which we are, that we find a withness in that word, in a sense that every living thing is a temple, and that a community like Holden is a place where we find that pattern of connectedness that begins with templing with God and templing with one another and templing with creation. I've been doing some reflection on my own thoughts and experiences with Holden, and I recognize that we have very much needed the spiritual direction of the wilderness, and the wilderness has had to be very patient with Holden, I think, to get our attention and to begin to work within the kind of spirit and rhythm of Holden to really make a difference. Holden used to give me a lot of trouble for its introspection and its navel gazing. And it's taken a long time for us to have our heads lifted up and our bodies kind of opened up to everything that's around us. But I really rejoice in seeing how that's recognizable now. I feel a lot of gratitude for some of the early powerful shaping that went into the village in some good traditions that we have in Lutheranism. I always remember Carol Hinderly talking about the poles of Grundtvig, of the folk school and the arts and play and exercise, and Kierkegaard, the questioning and the centering and the leap of faith. And that has really taken root, and it still is here. And I rejoice in the steady rhythm of the of social justice and of connectedness with the world, and how Holden, we all do tumble down the hill and back out into the world, and there is a kind of breathing in and breathing out here. I'm glad for the start that we have with allowing art to be a director for us as a way of praying. I'd like to see more of that. I'd like to see art as meditation, and that folks really be encouraged to find an expression of art, perhaps while they're here, and to begin to have some joy in that and confidence in that. I think that could be another good step. You know, we love our crafts, and the crafts are really forms of art. There's no doubt about that. But I'd like to see that more. I'd like to see the body drawn in more to our contemplating and our praying and our worshiping. I feel like we've made some good steps with that, especially in the earlier part of the summer with having dancers here and seeing a woman in her late 50s, a professional dancer trained with Martha Graham, dancing before the altar with Jim Cushman, a cerebral palsy person, and praising God for the beauty of their bodies. We really haven't gone very far knowing what to do with our bodies in our prayer and in our worship. So that's something I would hope for. I think there's kind of an agreement emerging here that maybe Holden is ready and is open to some further direction that really comes out of a wider ecumenism, a spirituality of prayer. I feel very much that we're very awkward with prayer. I think a lot of us have fights with it that go back somewhere into our earlier experiences as Christians. And I wish that I could feel more that the time of the day when we do pray is more prayer and less performance. I enjoy it. I participate in it. But I long for something that is corporate prayer and that occupies a greater place. And I feel that the time is ripe to be open to some new direction in that way. And with that, I'd like to stop. No, I think it's a urinal being flushed.
You're new here, Scott.
Yeah, it's louder than that.
Okay.
That'll be on the tape.
We have a few ideas out on the floor now. I'd like to turn it to those of you who have been here a lot, or those of you who have just turned up here. Some of your reflections on the contemplative aspects of Holden, ways that you've been led into a deeper sense of God's presence in this place.
As a physician from Canada, I've come to Holden 1 week per year for the last 7 years, and I've learned a lot, and I've come with different reasons each year. And often it doesn't present itself, but maybe a month before I come. For example, one summer we had a great study on Thomas Merton, and I had no real idea about this man. And the presentations were so deep that I have amassed the volumes of Thomas Merton's works, and I have studied him and studied the roots of his origins, of his thinking. And I've even gone as far as studied other religions like he did in terms of Zen and... This year, it's interesting, I said a month before I came, I'd like to do a little more contemplation, a little more meditation. And here we have a forum on it. I approached this week with the view, what does Holden have to offer in this area? And I found, as many people do, that the mealtime is the worst time to have anything to do with meditation, because there are many people coming. How long are you here? When do you leave? What's happening? Have you been to this? Etc. I find there's very few places to be alone and quiet. I found, ironically, halfway through my stay, I've been asked to move from one room because there was going to be a roommate move in with me. I did not want a roommate when I was meditating and contemplating. That's never happened in 7 years, but it happened to me this year. There may be some messages here, I'm not too sure. I've moved down into a new room and there's a baby crying next door. So, you know, these are not things that I'm begrudging about Holden, but there are things about Holden that could change. There could be some small, isolated, quiet tables at mealtime where people will choose to go, not to discuss where they're from, what they do, why they're here even. It's not that I don't want to talk about that, but there should be places where people can go to not talk at mealtime. I find we are too spread out. And when we are tasting the food, we are talking to someone. We should be tasting the food. If this is a meditational experience at that time, I would like to taste the food. It's not that I dislike the Holden place, or I would not come back year after year after year. It's just I think there should be some direction. It would be great to have spiritual direction, rather than floundering a lot. Experimentation is great, but if you get buried into an abyss, like you say, that's not great. So you have to look at the suggestions that are coming from the forum group and really get into it for those folks that want to do that. And it's interesting, many people will come not knowing why they're coming, and there'll be a meditative experience, and you won't be able to have it because we don't think about these people.
Thanks. What I say, I wouldn't want to be any recommendation for others. I can only speak what's within me. And and how I perceive this whole matter. Nor do I want to reference it particularly to Holden, because I'm very new at Holden. But I do want to speak specifically in terms of this aspect of silence and contemplation in the corporate community. I know there's a desire sometimes to experience this silence. People have expressed it when they come together. But for me, when a corporate congregation comes together, this is a terribly, it doesn't happen often. And I'd like those times when I come together with a congregation to be times when I can connect with other people, when I can talk to them, when I can share. If I want to contemplate, if I want to think silently, I can always at my home go into my closet or even the house, you know, is very quiet. But when I come to a place like this, even now, I think what I'll go back and really cherish is every person I have met, every person I have talked to, and the sharing and worshiping that we have done together. But I'm just speaking my own need, just as everybody else probably. But for me, those are precious. I meet God and other people. I need that fellowship, and I prize it highly.
Other folks' experiences?
Yeah, I'd like to say I need that fellowship too, but I also need the refreshing of solitude, and sometimes it does seem like such a barrage here. In fact, that was my fear coming here and being on staff, that I wouldn't be able to find enough time for myself, that I would just get stressed out, just not be able to be accessible to people because I needed time to myself. So I just take that time to be alone and do my own meditating, but what I do in my home community, and I wish, it seems ironic to say, let's add something to the schedule, which is already packed. But kind of tagging onto what Jerry said, I would like to see a contemplative prayer time when people would come in silence to a place. In my home community, what we do is we look at the text study, and we indicate that silently to one another. We could have that open in a place, and people could meditate on that, or they could simply come together in silence. But again, there is that power of a number of people drawn together in silence, in holiness. Right now, the time that I take to meditate, I take it alone. And I wish there was a way that, as Jerry said, it could be a corporate contemplation.
How about the Holden experience at other times of the year? Is it different for those of you who have been around the year during the winter? Is there more? There are solitude days in the winter. But does anybody have any experiences from that?
Oh yeah.
That's difficult if you've come here on a day of silence and you've never been here before. I walked into this in winter when I came back, and it was. Hunger day as well as silent day. Nobody was supposed to talk to me. You sat at the table in silence, and I understood Holden. But I would have been very uncomfortable with that if I had known what it was. You know, I'd wonder, what kind of place did I get into anyway? You need some preparation for that if you're going to have such a thing, or at least alert people on the bus that maybe this is what's going to be happening when you get there. We also have rooms, and we have one this summer that's a prayer room in the balcony, indicated with a little pink sign on the door. Those are meditation rooms. In the wintertime, they have one in this building, and it's open all the time for you to go in and meditate. There are books there for scripture reading and so forth.
It's not very quiet if somebody's downstairs playing the grand piano.
Well, that could be. I also point out, when I meet people on the hike, that these are think places that they can go. They can hear the bell, they can go by themselves and sit by the water. It's not a good place for conversation because it's noisy. But you take a book, you read, you can sit there in silence by yourself. And there are all kinds of walks around the trails not far away that most people would be able to get to. That I think if you look for those spots, you'll find them. Do you want somebody to go with you in silence? It was another thing we tried one year was to have solitary walks. One person led, and you walked 20 minutes apart, so you had nobody with you. But somebody was there as a leader, you know, to see that you got the right place and got back and so forth. And those were opportunities for people to be alone. Mm-hmm. And then when we got to the end of it, we had lunch together, and if they wanted to talk and share what happened, we did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A couple of things that I observed about living through half a winter here and going through a number of solitude days. And of course, it was really interesting, like you said, Gertrude, arriving here on a solitude.
I just would like to state a few observations. I came to Holden with basically only a recommendation that this was a wonderful place for my pastor, and the descriptions that I got from him was that this was a place that I could get a lot of time alone, yet or time with God, and I come and I'm working real hard at getting to know people because I'm here for the summer and I don't want to be a loner. But I also am finding, I'm glad that I'm so comfortable with my ability to contemplate and my ability to sit with people. And I don't have to be talking. And we can sit for 15 minutes and the other person might be squirming like I'll get out. But I'm okay with the silence. But I guess I need some more reinforcement that my time contemplating is okay here, because this is such a busy place. Mm-hmm. And there are so many things to do. I just need a little bit of reinforcement that yes, it's okay to spend time by yourself and sharing where it is that you find those places. And then respecting those places and keeping them that way, because it could get to be a place of meeting, and it's not intended to be a place of meeting. It's an intention to be within myself. I don't know if that's alone, but to be within myself. So sharing those places that we find, giving people encouragement that it's okay to spend time alone, and then also discussing what other ways that people find ways to contemplate about. If I'm put in front of a piece of paper and someone says, you know, this is a really good way that I find to contemplate, if I look at a blank piece of paper too long, I start squirming. But if I have time to think and process through and then can write, then that's very helpful for me. But it's just different ways of doing things that would be really nice to find out about. And maybe that's, you know, once a week you get together and somebody shares, or a couple people share the way that they contemplate. That can spur new ideas and have it be open to everybody. But, you know, if you're stuck, if you only know one side of the coin, how can you possibly imagine what else there is?
I should throw in something real quick. It sounds like we're talking about just having some more opportunities or choices for the opportunity of contemplation here. And I agree with a lot of people say that this is a very, very busy place. And maybe this can be done quite easily by having just some opportunities available here that aren't currently here and encouraging them. I think it's true that when you look at the board under the bell, that when you read that, it sure doesn't say that we do any contemplating here, or that the opportunities are there. I think, too, that there are people that are very new to contemplation, mm-hmm. and that are interested in that, and so we might need some sessions on how to, you know, do something like that, or just some kind of general guided direction, and that kind of brings up the idea of a spiritual director again. And I love the idea of somewhere away. And I also think, too, that the flies are awful, and it's really hard to contemplate with a fly, so you kind of do need an enclosed place, unfortunately.
It's just, this has been something I've struggled with. I came here with this battered spirit,
and needed a lot of nourishment. And when you were just talking, it was not too long ago, I was thinking, part of me really wanted this to be a place where I could just find time of quiet and to be encouraged in that and to find different ways to pray and meet God. And as you were talking, it just occurred to me, well, this isn't no different in a lot of ways than the outside world. Sometimes we say this is here and we all go out, but in a lot of ways this is like the outside world. And that's a challenge for me because I have to take responsibility for those times to go away and that need. And I can't blame anybody else or expect anybody else to do that for me. And what I was thinking is, well, this again, as I've heard, is a safe place where I can do that and test it and go against the stream of the busyness and take some time when I need it and not feel guilty or whatever. So it was encouraging to realize that maybe if I learn some stuff here and test here, that I'll be able to go out and do the same in the quote real world. Mm-hmm. Although this is very real to me.
I kind of agree with what she had to say. In a sense, sharing close spirituality with other people and maybe learning some aspects of spirituality that I never knew before by doing that is what brought me to Holden in the first place. And I seem to have a little trouble continuing that. I was hoping to get that to grow some more. I think maybe what she said, some kind of small session or something. To share spirituality together. For me, that's been a tremendous growth experience, and I really don't think if I hadn't done that in the beginning, I wouldn't be sitting here right now at home.
Why don't we take one more comment? And then...
I found the Compline service on Thursday evening mm-hmm. to be the most spiritually moving and uplifting experience. And it really centers my week when it's done well. Some are good and some are bad, and it doesn't seem to be a particular reason for that. But contemplative prayer together here, I will have more opportunities.
Well, thank you all for your time here, and I hope that you'll continue to think about these issues of silence and engagement, the issue of how Holden is working, and also the challenge that some people have thrown out to take responsibility for your time here, Holden, in exploring some new ways of being with yourself and being with other people. Thanks.